This is J. Lewis Mills, and you are about to be put on the level with J. Lewis Mills. Whether it's truth, controversy, good news, or bad. If it offends you, I'm sorry. If you agree, that's great. We talk about it all here because everything needs to be put on the level. Come in and join the conversation. I promise you'll be glad you did. Hello, hello. How are you all doing? You have got me. It's J. Lewis Mills, and you are now on the level with J. Lewis Mills. It is so effing awesome to be here live with you all again this week. I've been gone for a couple of weeks, wait a minute. What am I talking about? I think I just did a live show. No, last week was a pre-recorded show, so yes, I have been gone for a couple of weeks. So it is so very, very awesome to be back here with you live tonight. Just so you know, you can call in tonight at 1-888-429-5471. Again, that is 1-888-429-5471. It's been a good week for me this week. It's been kind of interesting. I have to definitely say that. But I am here with you tonight, so that's really all that matters. And tonight, I have what I think is a pretty cool guest. You all know how I am. I don't really like to do too much talking. I just want to get right into my conversations. So tonight, my guest is author Hollis Jo McCollum. She resides in Atlanta, Georgia. I say that she is a Dungeons and Dragons guru. She reached out to me through LinkedIn and wanted to come on the show and talk about her book, To Save a World, once I, did my little research and had my conversation with her. I knew that she was absolutely someone that I wanted to have on the show. We will be talking Dungeons and Dragons. By the way, she did convert me. So we will be talking about that as well. But I would like to welcome Ms. Hollis Jo McCollum from Atlanta, Georgia. How are you doing, ma'am? And thank you very kindly for being here this evening.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. And excited to chat with you about all the nerdy things tonight. So that's always fun.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, I like nerds. So, one of my favorite movies is Revenge of the Nerds. So, that is a real thing for me. I don't necessarily know if I would classify you as a nerd. I would classify you as a very interesting, eclectic type person. But nerd, that's all well and good. So how are you doing tonight? How is everything going with you?
Everything's going well, thanks. I had a good day at work and ate a little bit of ice cream tonight. So everything is good. How about you?
Everything is great. It's always a good night when you have ice cream, right?
Oh yeah, especially when it's got those dark chocolate covered cashews in it, it's that's the good stuff right there.
Yes, ma'am.
I go for the cold.
It absolutely is. So I mentioned that, just so my listeners know, a couple of days ago, Hollis and I, we had what I like to call a pre-interview conversation. And I have to say that having this conversation with Hollis, it kind of made me think, I might stop having pre-interview conversations with people. And I say that because there was so much gold that was in that initial conversation. I'm a very in-the-moment type person. Mm-hmm. And, for me, it's always just that initial contact always seems to be the greatest. People say the first impression is always the best. So there was so much gold in our first conversation. I'm definitely confident that there's going to be gold in this one as well.
But there better be.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. But in that first conversation, I was really able to learn about Hollis. So a lot of the questions I'm going to ask her tonight, I kind of already know the answer, but you haven't heard from her before. So we're going to pretend like I've never spoken to her either. So let's just start with your love for Dungeons and Dragons and how long you have played that for.
Well, very gladly. Well, I have been playing Dungeons and Dragons since I was about 11 years old. I had known about it previously because my older brother and sister, I'm the youngest of three, had been playing for a little bit previous, but I wasn't deemed mature enough to play in the very beginning. And they were probably right. You know, 9 year olds, probably not the best players. Distracted.
I get that.
But yeah. Yep. So I started playing, with my siblings and then also mostly with my best friend. And I'm 36 now, and my best friend and I still play Dungeons and Dragons.
Wow.
We love it. We're nerds. We're dorks, and we adore it. It's great.
Was it the fact that your brother and sister were playing that started you playing, or was it the fact that they wouldn't let you play and that made it so much more important to you that, okay, I really have to play this game?
You know, maybe a bit of both. I honestly, as the third child, because I'm the last of three, you get a little used to not being able to play. Because, you know, there are two controllers and all these things, and you get used to being excluded in a lot of ways. Not that they ever did purposefully exclude me. We all had great relationships. But it's just they were older. They knew how to play the games better. And by default, I ended up being the watcher. And so I don't know if it was so much that as it was just, you know, this was such a wonderful outlet for imagination, which I'm sure you've discovered at this point because I've converted you now.
Yes, you really have. And I am in such a creative space right now that it seems like playing Dungeons and Dragons would almost be like therapy. You know what I mean? It's almost like it gives you a way if you have a lot of creative energy, which, I mean, the planets have aligned, the moon has risen, whatever you want to say for me. But I'm just in a very creative space right now. And it's almost like it helps. I see it as something that's going to help me burn off some of these creative thoughts that I have to just be able to go into. Because, okay, so for my listeners that don't know what Dungeons and Dragons is, it's really a role-playing game that you sit with people and, you know, there might be dice, but a lot of it is just your complete imagination. And for me, that was the interest. And I had heard of Dungeons and Dragons before, but it was just something about the way you explained it to me. It was like, wait a minute, this is something I really need to get into. So I have Googled Dungeons and Dragons communities around the Hollywood and North Hollywood area, and my goodness, I was surprised how many different
things.
My gosh, I was like, wow, what am I really missing? So
we're everywhere.
Do you still remember your first Dungeons and Dragons experience?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do.
What was that like?
Well, my very first one was a game that my brother played with me. And it was really fun. It was so much fun. My character was, he came up with the whole adventure. He was what the DM, you know, the DM or the dungeon master, so the person who comes up with the adventure, and I was the player. And my character was a creature called a fairy dragon. And it was just kind of like finding my way through the forest. And I kept running into all of these, you know, you're a fairy dragon, basically you're a tiny, tiny dragon the size of a fairy. And I kept just having to go through all these obstacles and dodge birds and all this other stuff. And it was really cool. It was a really fun thing. And then, so then my first experience with it, I wasn't even a humanoid creature. I was a dragon.
Dragon. How long did it take for you to graduate to humanoid?
Oh, the next game. The next game, I played a human character, not an elf or anything. She was just a human. and which is cool in itself. That's great too. And she was, and I, you know, keep in mind, I made this character back in the early to mid 90s, before Frozen ever came out.
Yeah. Okay.
But her name was Elsa.
Okay.
And she had blonde hair and green eyes.
Oh, wow.
I go, hey, Disney stole my character, but she, she was a, like a swords woman, with a short temper, and very, short, you know, she Napoleon complex. I liked playing her. She was a short person. And so she was always kind of looking to prove herself with people not believing that this little blonde thing could do something. And so she always kind of had a chip on her shoulder and all that. And she was really fun to play.
How long have you been playing Dungeons and Dragons for?
Oh, goodness. So since I was 11, and so 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm dating myself here. This 25
years. So in those 25 years, do you find yourself playing this game with pretty much the same players, or is it always a new experience with new players, you know, kind of every time?
Well, for me, it's mostly just my best friend and I. She and I don't follow the rules exactly. We sort of morphed our own way of playing, because when we first started playing, mm-hmm. with Dungeons and Dragons, you usually have to buy all the books and things. Mm-hmm. And when we were kids, we didn't have any of our own money, and allowance money didn't pay for these big books.
Yeah.
So we sort of made up. We took what we already knew of the rules, and we kind of made up our own thing, because she's actually 2 years younger than me.
So
we have our own method of playing, and she and I still play D&D. We've got plans to do it in a week. We're gonna sit down. We actually plan it out, and she's got two kids, married happily, all these other things, and mm-hmm. she and I call up and say, okay, well, you know what, you want to come over and play some D&D tonight? All right, yeah, I'm going to put the kids to bed and tell my husband I'll be over 8:30. See? and we set up and we get our popcorn and we play. But I do actually also play with a few other groups of friends that are really, really fun and really great. But I tend to stay with the same people. There okay. are other people who like to diversify their experience, which is also really cool, and they'll kind of jump from group to group and just see who wants to join what and see what they can do.
Now, in our conversation previous, you had mentioned to me that you spent a lot of time in Asia.
Yes.
As you were growing up, and then you've been back in your later years. So as far as this game Dungeons and Dragons pertains to your friends abroad, do you ever play this with any of your Asian friends? And would you also mind touching on the travels that you've had in your life so far?
Not at all. Yeah, of course. Yeah, you know, love to talk about the world. That's fabulous. So I guess I'm trying to think. In the past, I have played with my friends who are from, you know, various places. Mm-hmm. But currently, I don't think I've played with any of my international friends in several years.
Okay.
But my boyfriend, who is from the Philippines, has mentioned that he wants to play over and over, and he's even made a character and everything. And every time I say, hey, sweetie, you want to join a game? Da da da. He's like, oh no, I have other things to do on that particular night. I'm like, okay, you wimp, whatever. he's actually busy, okay. I believe it's fine. But yeah, so not presently, not really, but No, it is definitely an international thing. There, you know, you can find groups all over the world. More of a language problem than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I love to travel. I've been to Japan and China and South Korea and the Philippines and a few other places. That, you know, Asia is wonderful. It's a beautiful place. I feel really at home.
These are places that you have lived when how is it that you came to live in the Asian countries that you did, and which countries were those that you lived in?
Well, the Asian country, the one place that I lived was the island of Guam, which is a U.S. territory, but it's located in the South Pacific and Micronesia, you know, all those tiny, tiny little islands. And, there are a lot of Japanese tourists there and a lot of Japanese resorts. So I lived there when I was very young. I remember it quite well. I'm one of those weirdos who remembers back before they can walk. I have memories from like being in a bassinet. So so I remember pretty clearly being on the island of Guam and going boonie stomping, or what my family called boonie stomping. My dad would take us into the jungle and we would essentially stomp around and discover things. And it was fantastic. I'm very spoiled child growing up, quite frankly. I got a lot of adventure, and I'm just very comfortable. Just very comfortable. Other than that, I've had extended stays in Japan, and Japan is the only one I've really had an extended stay in. But I've lived in Europe more than I've lived in Asia, and so Italy and the UK and the Czech Republic have been more of my living abroad experiences. But I've visited, I lost count at 25, somewhere over 25 countries.
Wow.
Really lucky.
Okay. Now, let's get to, well, you are on the level with J. Lewis Mills, and if you would like to speak to myself or Hollis, you can call 1-888-429-5471. That's 1-888-429-5471. To save a world, how did that come to be a thing? A book.
Oh, well, as you know, but your listeners don't know, it was actually inspired by a D&D campaign that I played with my best friend back in 2006, 2007. Mm-hmm. And it was really fun.
Mm-hmm. What was so special about this particular game that you were playing that made you say, you know what, I want to write a book about this?
You know, I guess it was just a feeling, because she and I have had a lot of really cool adventures, but I'll be honest, sometimes we get a little slapstick. It's just the two of us, we're silly people, and sometimes we sort of lose track of our plots and our actual quests just to have a little fun and have the characters go do something ridiculous just because we think it'll be funny and it'll be silly to play through it. But in this particular game, while we did have our silly moments, we actually stayed really true to the original quest that I had laid out. So I was really excited about that, number one. And we actually like finished everything in the story arc that I wanted to finish it. And that in itself was quite an accomplishment, because we don't always, we get lost in the woods a lot of the time. We don't always get to that end mark, or we don't always get there as we would like to.
Mm-hmm.
But something about just the combination of the characters and the world and everything else, it all just clicked, and it was so much more fun than, I mean, a lot of our games are fun, but this one is definitely top three of the now 50 games that we have played over the course of our friendship.
Wow. So for my listeners that haven't Writ to Save a World yet, or haven't downloaded it yet. I've put it on my social media. Tell us exactly what to save a World is about.
Sure. And thank you so much for sharing it. I appreciate that a lot. I really do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. So the book is a sci-fi fantasy novel, mostly fantasy adventure, though you'll find it in the sci-fi section at Barnes & Noble. And it is a post-apocalyptic fantasy world. So this world that is called Rishan, the entire planet is in chaos because a generation before it started, before the story begins, there were all these gods that governed the natural ways of the world, seasons and what have you. And the gods got into what I call the heavenly wars. And they kill each other off. They just kill each other off. And now Rishan has no natural governance. Seasons aren't making any sense. Mountain ranges are popping up overnight. It's a terrible, horrible situation. It's a true cataclysm. And you have these characters who are living in the world, and crops aren't surviving because it's sweltering hot one day and 30 below the next. And it's just, you can't grow things under those conditions. It's awful. And so, you know, food is very scarce and people are dying, and the planet itself is slowly dying because there is no natural appropriate balance or rhythm. Mm-hmm. And the original characters, or originally the characters, set out just to save their people. Two of the main characters are from a tribe that I call the Irani tribe in the book. And their initial intent is to go to find this particular artifact, which could possibly help to save their people. And then through searching for this particular artifact, they meet two of the other main characters, or the other two, because there are four main characters in the story. And then they run into this sage-like character who tells them, hey, there's a prophecy, and you guys are meant to restore balance to Rishan. You're going to be the ones to get everything back and you know, pull the planet up by its bootstraps, essentially. But you have to agree to do it. You know, they have the choice to say, I'm not going to do it, because it takes a huge amount of self-sacrifice from them. And they really have to give up a lot. And by the way, they're going to get no credit for it whatsoever. There is no toting around this prophecy. No one knows about it except for this one person who saw it. And, you know, so there's not even glory in it for them. It's all pure sacrifice. And so
who are the four characters?
So they're the first character you meet is Ethne, and she is elf maiden, a redhead. She's ginger, and she's looking to escape. She's dissatisfied in her life. She is dissatisfied with the society that she lives in. She loves her family and everything, but she knows that she can't be her true self in her current situation. So honestly, Ethne is just looking to be liberated, but quietly. She's not looking to make the big fuss, but she would like to quietly just go live her own life without constraints and without having to worry about formal cultural expectations. Mm-hmm. And you have Darian, who is a member of the same tribe as Ethne, and he is your classic true blue military man hero stereotype. He's great, though. I love him. He really is truly noble. He does the right thing as best as he can. He tries really hard. He has his own personal struggles. He is somebody who is very into the society, and he is somebody who has a bit of a narrow scope because he lives so much in the within the bubble of his cultural world, and he just says, okay, this is how things are supposed to be, and he's a very good person, but he has to work through being not in a bad way, but he's a little closed-minded, you know. He's got that small town mentality, if you will, where he's not as open to how other things happen, and it's something that he has to learn. And
so when this becomes a movie, I'll play Darius.
Hey, you can be Darian. That's right.
Yes.
Yep. If you can do that. Go for it. I'd love
that.
Who
are the other two?
So the other two you run into, there is Aram. These are all elves, by the way. I the last one is not an elf, but the Aram, Ethne, Darian are all elves. And Aram is, he is not of the Irani tribe. He's what I call a city elf. And, but he's an outcast. I won't tell you why, but, he was born and raised in a city. And then around his adolescence, he was kicked out of his home, and he's been basically living a lone wolf white lifestyle for years, until he runs into Ethne and Darian, and they all meet up because they're all after the same artifact for different reasons. And then the last one is Yoselin, and Yoselin looks a lot like an elf, but she's actually a race that I call demons. Demons in my world of Rashaan are a race, just like humans and elves and dwarves are races in fantasy worlds. And Yoselin is so bright and so bubbly and really friendly. And she's got this glorious, you know, dark purple hair and, you know, cinnamon colored skin. And she's really, she's like a feisty Latina. When I was writing Yoselin, I was like, oh, she's a feisty little Latina. That's how I wrote her. And she herself deals with a lot of prejudices because she's a demon, but she looks a lot like an elf, with the exception of she's got these two black horns, you know, coming out of her head. She's got horns. And so it's obvious that she's not an elf. and nobody wants to be her friend. She's such a social person. She's incredibly gregarious. And the poor thing really wants friends. She really wants just to have companionship. And a lot of people will not be companion to her because she's a demon, and there's a lot of strife between the different races. You know, you have humans and elves are pretty okay. There's a little bit of snootiness between them. You know, elves are seen as feeling a little more superior than the other races. They live the longest, so on and so forth. And demons are kind of, they're physically stronger, and they have a lot of these special abilities that that elves and humans don't have. You know, like various, depending on the type of demon they are, they could maybe spit venom or just whatever. There's a lot of various things that they can do that human and elves cannot. And maybe it's a jealousy, or maybe it's just a fear of different people. And they are all carnivorous as well, which is a bit off-putting to elves and humans.
Yeah. Would you say the elves have a bit of a Napoleon complex?
Maybe a little. They're tall, so it's not the short thing. But yeah, okay. they have elves. Maybe have a bit of a superiority complex for sure.
Okay.
In general, yes, which is something that makes Ethne a little different than the other elves, because she herself feels like an outcast among her own people. She is really not. She is the one who welcomes the other outcasts, and Darian, he's not rude or anything, but he struggles a bit more with accepting people who are not with society, if you will. And it's really interesting. And of course they all become very good friends and really come to love each other very much. And it's something that happens, but it's sort of a coming of age story for the characters through saving the world. Mm. And yeah, they, you know, you got to try. And I like to see when people read the book, I say, oh, you have to tell me who your favorite character is, because then that tells me who they relate to most closely. Yeah. And yeah, you may have pre-picked yours. It sounds like you might be relating to Darian.
Yeah, I am. And in our previous conversation also, when you first told me about this story, you know, it's called To Save a World. And mm-hmm. there are four characters. So I remember I said to you, are these characters supposed to represent the four elements? And initially you had said, well, you didn't even think about that. But after mm-hmm. thinking about it, you were able to put each character with a different element. And I would ask that you share that part of our conversation with my listeners as well. For the four characters, which character would you see as being which element? And does that thought pattern change how you see your book, I guess, is the question.
Right. Well, and I loved that you had that viewpoint. I said it in our previous conversation as well. Mm-hmm. And it was such a really cool way to look at it, because I don't know if it changed the viewpoint so much as enhanced, because okay. when you asked, I said, oh yeah, Ethne is clearly the fire and mm-hmm. Darian is very much earth and Aram is really water and Yoselin is air. They absolutely, as soon as you said it, it clicked. And I said, no, I really do have four distinct elements here. And it really kind of enhanced the vision of the characters. And it did bring a whole other level to the whole bringing balance back to the world mm-hmm. situation. And mm-hmm. In the book, a lot of it is a good and evil balance, because you have to have both. You have to have that yin and yang to keep everything in order.
Yes.
But yeah, with the four of them, and the four elements as well, that's a whole other level. And I love that you went there. That brings well, a lot you. Of depth to things.
When you and your best friend were playing this game, which characters were you?
Which character were you? I played Ethne and Aram.
Okay.
And she played Yoselin and Darian.
Does it ever become a conflict of interest when one person plays two characters?
Not for us, and it's not usual at all. In classic role-playing games, you just have the one character per person, and then the DM or the dungeon master, the person who has done the whole quest, they are wholly responsible for all the other characters. But since Ashley and I have this weird morphed sense of playing that we've sort of created on our own, and it works for the two of us. I don't know if it would work for anyone else, sure. Just because we have a particular energy. And, you know, she's my best friend. She's my sister, really. Mm-hmm. And she and I just, we get it. We understand, and we'll take turns playing the various what are called NPCs, the non-playing characters, the extras, if you will. And if you were to think of it like a movie, you know, you have your main characters and here are your side characters.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So we'll kind of, but usually, like, when it comes to the side characters, one of us will take maximum responsibility for one or the other or something, but the other one can step in if they need them to do something. But we usually, the book itself has a romantic subplot because that's fun. And and then
that's fun.
Because that's fun. Hey, who doesn't like a bit of romance?
Yeah, that's true.
Little
who without giving up too much of the book, Can you tell, or without giving up too much of the story, can you tell who the romantic link is between, or do people have to get the book to see? That's a fair answer.
It's a fair, yeah. I would say that there are two couples in the book, and given who the four characters are, I think it's kind of obvious. but I'll leave it at that. But you have two little romances going on in the background of the quest, as it goes along, and so you get and they're two very different couples as well, which I think is kind of fun. You have so I've had people who have read the book say, oh, I really liked their vibe like a lot more. I thought they were really cool. The other ones were just like, yeah, I don't know, I wasn't into it. But then I had the other people go, oh my God, I was so into what they were doing, and they were really like the way they interact with each other is how I interact with my husband or something. And so it's two different relationships, but it's fun. It brings the balance, and and who doesn't like the romance? And hey, you're on a major quest that's life changing with someone with attractive people. It's bound to happen. It's gonna happen.
You are on the level with J. Lewis Mills. I'm speaking with Miss Hollis Jo McCollum. You can call in at 1-888-429-5471. That is 1-888-429-5471. Of the four characters, even though you play two of them, do you personally have a favorite character of this story?
You know, I'd probably have to go with Ethne.
Okay.
Why did I
know you were going to say that?
Probably because she's the one who starts the book.
Yeah.
Yep. She's your, if you're to pick a main character, because she's my personal favorite, she is the one who, if you were to pick a single main character, she would be it. She's the one who starts the story, and that's the first sentence is Ethne is the first one. And she's really cool. I like her, and she allows me to step outside of myself, because Ethne is a very different person than me, which surprises a lot of people. They're like, usually your main characters are really similar to the writer, and she's similar to me in some ways, but honestly, she's a very different person. And she wants very different things. And it's interesting. It was fun for me to step out of that. If I were to pick somebody I was more similar to, I'm very similar to Yoselin. I am much more of that nature, and of her wants and needs and things like that. But stepping outside of myself and portraying somebody very different and really critically thinking about, okay, what wouldn't I do? And then having Ethne do that was a lot more fun for me personally.
When you play when you play the game and you create a new character, do you go into it? Do you go into creating a character to be similar to you? And also, are there times that you look forward to, like, if you've played, let's say you've played five games or five rounds, and you've had five different characters. Is there ever a time where you say, you know what, I am purposely going to make a character that is so far outside of my box that it's going to be fun to play? Or do you always put some element of yourself into every character that you create?
Well, I tend to step outside of myself a little bit more. I love to act. I acted through high school and into college. I chose not to make it a career path, but I love portraying different characters. And that's another thing about Dungeons and Dragons, something that you'll probably really enjoy as an actor, is you get to portray all these characters, and you get to it's almost like free acting class, because you get to say, okay, let me step outside of my box. Let me explore this entirely different persona emotionally and kind of push myself to get there. So I like to push myself. I like to play characters who are not me. And I oftentimes do put a piece of myself in the character. Usually it's my stubbornness or something a little bit more sassy about my personality, because that's fun. But for example, the game I'm playing right now with my best friend that we're in the middle of and having a wonderful time, my character is an ancient Egyptian priestess named Lapis. And Lapis is very regal. She's gorgeous, of course, because I like to make them pretty. That's part of the fun for me. And and she's really used to being in charge. She is a high priestess. She is the like fifth daughter of the pharaoh. This girl gets her way every day. she gets her way all day, every day. And she's the boss where she comes from. She is the boss, and she knows what she's talking about. She's a born leader. Mm-hmm. She's a priestess of the healing god in ancient Egypt. It's Set, I believe, is the name of him, or his name. And so she's essentially a doctor. She actually knows medical things. She's really intelligent, all of that, but she's put in a situation where she's taken out of her own environment, and she has to learn how to take direction from people who are not her. She's used to being the head honcho, and the only other person who can say anything above her is her father, who is the pharaoh. So she struggles with that a lot, but she... Well, I guess she is similar to me, because I also have a problem. I'm very much a leader, and I do have a little problem with authority. It's one of my personal issues, but she is not so much a problem with authority as she's just taken aback. Like, wait a minute. Somebody just told me what to do. I don't know if I should be offended, but that makes sense. And she's got to think through it a little bit more, because it's such an alien thing for her to have other people saying, we're doing this now, and have it not be her decision. And
I do have a question to ask about this character you're talking about right now, but just real quickly, I want to get back to the book To Save a World, just because we're almost to the end of the show.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's crazy. Whenever I do shows, it really doesn't seem like it's an hour, but you know, it goes by so quickly. But just for To Save a World, how long ago did you write it? How long has it been out? And what is the feedback that you are receiving from the book?
Well, so I sat down and started writing it back in 2008. We finished the campaign that it's based on in 2007. And then in 2008, I felt inspired and I wrote it down. It took me 4 years to write, because of course you have to adjust things. A role-playing game does not directly translate. Plus, initially, I wasn't originally thinking of getting it published. I was writing it because I wanted to write it. And then after I was sharing it with friends and family, they said, this is great. You need to get it published. So I got it copyrighted and started sending it out to publishers. So it was 4 years of writing, 4 years of begging people to publish my book, and finally getting accepted, which was shorter than I thought. The average author, according to what I read online, it takes 5 to 10 years for your first book to be published when you start submitting. So I feel very privileged and lucky indeed that it only took me 4. That was really amazing.
And who did publish your book?
So Page Publishing published my book. They are, they're focused on first-time authors. Mm-hmm. And they're based out of New York, and they are, they're really good. I liked them. I could work with them a little bit more. When they sent me the contract, they didn't balk at me coming back and saying, okay, here are the adjustments that I need, and then we can sign this thing. Because a lot of the time, publishers will say, no, you're doing what I say, but I'm a project manager in my day job, and I know contracts.
Yeah.
I work in the business world, and so when I see a contract, I'm like, okay, this thing can be shaped and we can agree on it, but first draft is a first draft in my mind. Mm-hmm. And so they were very willing to work with me, which was lovely. And one of the things that I'm really glad I put in there is I actually designed the cover of To Save a World as well as writing it. So because I basically said I want to submit a cover design and you will have the ultimate choice. But if mine is the best design, then that's what we're using. And that mine was the best design. So the book is entirely my intellectual property from appearance to the insides, which makes me really happy. Let's see, it's available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Mm-hmm. It's been published for a little over a year now. It has been out since July of 2017. Mm-hmm. And I love it. And you can also walk into any bookstore and just with my name, Hollis Jo McCollum, in the title, To Save a World, and any bookstore can look it up in their computer and order it for you if you want a hard copy like that. But you can get the hard copies on BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon too. Probably a little faster.
And other than friends and family, what feedback have you gotten from readers or critics?
Honestly, I've gotten nothing but positive feedback, which pleasantly shocks me. Usually I had prepped myself for some negativity. I really had. I think you have to. Yes. I was expecting it, because not everybody's going to think my work is good. And I understand that. Mm-hmm. You know, and not everybody likes that sort of thing. That's fine. But I honestly haven't yet heard anything negative, which makes me unbelievably happy. I've got 5-star ratings on Amazon and other books, the book sites that I've checked that have reviews. There aren't a crazy amount of reviews, but those who have reviewed it have given it 5 stars, and it makes me so happy. And I love reading the comments. And one of the overwhelming things I keep seeing is people are actually asking me for a sequel, which, hooray.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ultimate rewards for a writer. It's so amazing that people enjoyed the story and the characters enough to say, give me more, which it is a complete story. I promise I don't leave you hanging. But
so because you do have people that are asking for a sequel, I'm sure that at some point, and we would know, I already know the answer to this, but I'm sure that at some point there is a sequel coming. But because the publishing house that did this first one only works with, as you said, first time authors, what will you do to lock down a publishing company for your second one? And is it a thing, because I'm not a writer, but mm-hmm. is it a thing that because your first one was published, do you think it will be easy to find a publishing house to do the sequel?
I don't think it'll be easy, but I think it will be less difficult than it was to get the first one published.
Okay.
I'm a bit like, I'm one of those people, I'm kind of like a pit bull when I want something. That's one of the reasons I got published in 4 years, is I find my way and I get tunnel vision, and I move. And I'm fine with rejection. All the rejection letters I got, I was like, well, next in line. And I kept moving, you know, and that's how I roll. And so, but now that I'm making a bit of a name for myself, because most traditional publishers are more interested in you, because they're investing so much money in you, they need to know that, that you're going to make them money. And if you have a well-reviewed book out there, if you've already proven that you can make a little money, then they're going to pay more attention to you. So I don't think it'll be easy, but I do think it's won't be as, I don't think I'm going to have to push as hard as I did the first time. I think that with, and you know, hey, as long as I keep doing these interviews and keep putting my name out there and marketing my book like I've been doing, then hey, dream of all dreams is that somebody will just contact me and say, hello, are you working on a sequel? Which probably won't happen. It's something I, you know, think about at night when I sleep. But
well, that kind of goes into the next question that I had for you. Your book has been out for just over a year, as you say, coming out July 2017. What have you done in order to market and promote your book? And do you do any book tours? Do you have any book signings coming up around the country anywhere that my listeners could come to get a copy of your book and see you?
Well, I don't have anything set up right now. I have done a few book signings here in Georgia, so I've done that locally.
How did that go for you?
It went well. It went well. I enjoyed it. I got to meet a lot of cool people and got to write, because when I sign things, I give you a random fact with my signature because it amuses me. Sure. You know, I'll be like, sharks have no vocal cords, Hollis Joe McCullum, and keep moving. You
know? Sure. Okay. That's not nice.
Yeah. Why not? Makes me memorable, I hope. And so I'm doing social media, a lot of social media pushing, obviously seeking out people on LinkedIn and other places who I think would mesh well, you know, with my book. And I'm saying, hey, you want to interview me? And, or would you like to review my book and all of that? I'm actually going to be a featured speaker at Lagos Comic Con in Nigeria on September 15th. So I'm really excited about that, because that is the largest Comic Con in Africa. I'm going to hit a whole bunch of my target demographic right there.
How did that come about for you?
That came about through Instagram. I have in my author Instagram, the @HollisJoeMcCullum. And I just, you know, when I'm connecting with people on there, every now and again, I'll DM whoever and say, hi, you know, I don't know if you know, but I'm currently promoting my book. If there's anything that I can do with you that would be mutual beneficial for us, let me know. And I didn't actually end up DMing this person. I thought he was just another author that I was linking up with, but he turned out to be one of the organizers for Lagos Comic Con. And he messaged me and he said, hey, I really like everything that I'm reading about you, because I have, you know, my Facebook and my YouTube channel and everything. And he said, I would love it if you would be a featured speaker at Lagos Comic Con. I'm looking for authors of this genre. And I jumped at it naturally. I mean, who wouldn't?
Absolutely.
Yep. So I'm going to do it. I'm doing the, I actually recorded my video and I recorded it in costume. So I'm dressed up like Yoselin, because it's a Comic Con and, you know, I got to fit in with everybody. I got to be with the people.
Absolutely. Now, earlier I said, I already knew the answer to the question of your sequel. Instead of me saying I already know the answer, I wouldn't mind if you share the answer with my listeners. Is there going to be a sequel, and what is going to happen before there is a sequel?
Well, so the yes, there is going to be a sequel. I'm currently outlining it, and all the characters will come back, and all the ones that survived anyway, and they will you will see everything, the next steps in their lives. So I'm very excited about that, and I have a I already think I have a title, which I'm really excited about. I'm going to call it, I'll let you guys know the title. It's I'm thinking of calling it The Queen Witch, which I think will be fun. Yeah, I'm excited about that one.
Yeah, that's an interesting title.
Thank you. Yeah, it's actually taken from a very old Scottish fairy lore story that I heard some very, very, very old man telling on a documentary. And I've never been able to find it anywhere online, but I heard that old man tell that story about this old Scottish fairy story, and it always rang in my ears, the Queen Witch. And I thought, oh, that is just got a real good ring to it. And so I've sort of built a bit of a story around that persona. And
have you tried going to YouTube and just YouTubing very, very old Scottish man, Queen Witch?
Well, actually, I saw the documentary on YouTube. I will listen to documentaries on YouTube while I work a lot of the time to just kind of keep my focus. I like to listen to stand-up comedy and educational documentaries and things, and it happened to be a documentary on fairy lore that I was listening to on YouTube, and it really caught my attention. Really fun documentary, by the way. If you were to type in fairy documentary into YouTube, there aren't that many of them. It's about an hour long, super fun. And,
well, we've got about 4 minutes left, Hollis. What is, first of all, thank you very kindly for being here this evening. What can people expect coming up next, and where can people find you? All of this information is going to be on in my archive on my show page in the archive, but so that you can tell people where they can find you and what is coming up next for you.
Well, thank you. Yes, and I've had a delightful time. I really have. I love talking to you. You're so enjoyable. And so you can find me on Facebook as Hollis Jo McCullum. You can find me on YouTube as Hollis Jo McCullum, author. Okay. You can find me on Instagram at Hollis Jo McCullum. Everything's my name, just my full name. And of course, the book is on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. And I'm on LinkedIn, also under my Hollis Jo McCullum name. Get a lot of use out of it. And so that's it. But I post links everywhere. I do have a website that I don't update terribly often, but it's there.
And what's coming up for you?
So what I'm currently finishing up is a whole other project with whole other worlds and everything. And I will be pushing to get that one published first. And I told you a little bit about it in our private conversation, of course, but it's a completely different story, but it's a really heart-wrenching war story taking place in a fantasy world with totally different characters in a totally different world. But I'm hoping very compelling as well, and emotionally intriguing.
Okay. So I know that I have a few people that are listening in Georgia that are Dungeons and Dragons fans. So I am hoping that they will get in contact with you and you all can play a game. I don't remember which one of the posts it was that I posted about our show, but I got a private message from someone saying that they knew you were from Georgia and they were very excited to listen to the show. I did send them a response and told them that I'm sure you would love to hear from them.
Oh, yes.
So I don't know if they are listening or not. But I do know that I was contacted by people that have read your book, and they were pretty excited that you were on tonight. So I just thank you very much for being here. And when the sequel to Save a World comes out, you'll absolutely have to come back. When your next novel comes out before the sequel, you will have to come back. And any time that you have anything to talk about, you will just have to come back.
Well, yeah, or just give you a call and talk your ear off. That'll be fine too.
Yeah, that works for me perfectly.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so pleased to hear that. That really warms my heart to hear the feedback that you've gotten. So thank you for sharing that very much. Yay!
Absolutely. Well, we have come to the end. I thank you all for being here with me this evening. Make sure you listen to next week's show. We might get a little dark next week, but it is necessary. There's a little situation that happened with me and someone else not too long ago. And, the name of my show is On the Level for a reason. And I have posted on my social media, and I've said on this show more than once, hell hath no fury like J. Lewis being scorned. Well, I was scorned, and you will absolutely hear about it next week. So please make sure you join me. I hope you all have a great week this week. Please take care of yourselves and each other. Please understand we do have to live together. Let's do it all together. We are out.
Are you inspired? Can I inspire you more? Come join me every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. on Station 2 here at BBS Radio. Let's get inspired together. Come join me. You'll be glad you did.